Take 60 seconds to finish up, please. 60 seconds. Okay, come to a close, please. Okay, if you would finish, please. Okay, if I get your attention back up here. Welcome back, everybody. It's always a good sign if I can't get people to stop talking. It's always very good. Okay, what I'd like to do is collect about half a dozen ideas on what you consider to be the most important, the rank in terms of rank ordering. What did you think was the most important, either with regard to what works or what doesn't work? And we'll just take a half a dozen so that we don't lose too much time with this. So who would like to, we have one. Yeah, so we need the microphone right here.
Oh, hello, my name is Andrea, I'm from Costa Rica. We work in TV stations, so we rank several categories. Number one is that the boss always scolds us. Like kids, so that's number one. Number two, lack of agenda. Number three, the lack of allocation of duties, because a lot of people, they have to do this and they don't want to do it at the end. Number four is that being silent is an issue because people doesn't want to participate. They don't want to tell what they think and what are they feeling.
Okay, hold on. That's plenty.
Okay.
I don't want you to take everybody else.
But number five is very important. I think the boss is the problem.
Okay, so we have some others. Things that work or don't work in your meetings. Please, right here.
I am Marcelo Teles for the record. I'm going to speak in my language, but it is written in English.
Of the meeting, clarificar los propósitos
de la reunión. Clarification of the meeting purpose. The importance of coordinating and measuring the contexts. These are positive situations or pluses. And active participation and involvement of all as equals.
Yes, okay, good, thank you, good. Right over here. Can you?
Thank you. With regards to meetings, discussion meetings, or panel discussions, the importance of having a very good chairperson, someone who can get the persons around the table to talk together and who can lead a discussion, a good timekeeper as well, because very often in discussions there's always the risk that you run out of time. So a very good chair who sticks to an agenda and who motivates the discussion. And
good, thank you very much. So we'll take one more, please.
Hi.
My name is Fatima Cambronero. Some points were already mentioned, so we are going to mention the new one. Something that is a plus is that the meetings the working groups meetings are carried out in the same language, so this makes the working group more dynamic, and we can achieve concrete and better results in terms of time. Something that doesn't work is when we establish the working group meetings in set schedules throughout teleconferences or during fixed days. This is due to the internalization that we have within the ALAC group, but this falls into different time zones, and perhaps participation is not possible. Perhaps that person is interested in participating in that working group, but due to time reasons, he or she cannot participate. So we should suggest having different days and timetables. Thank you.
So these are really all excellent points, and I hope that I'm going to cover most of them. If there are any that I miss, like, for example, I really didn't I didn't spend a specific amount of time or slides on virtual meetings. The reason for that is because the principles that we're going to cover are equally effective whether it's a virtual meeting or a face-to-face meeting. The differences are specific, as Fatima mentioned. One example in virtual meetings is what's called sharing the pain. So many working groups, many committees agree that they'll have meetings in each time zone so that no one will ever be always asked to get up at 3 a.m. or 11 p.m. So that's just a good principle. But in addition, there are many things that we're going to cover that also will work in virtual meetings. So if we can move on then to the next slide. So here's the reason why I put this as key number one is because I think of this in rank order, that this one is critical. And so this has to do with making process agreements up front. So this is what I mean by a process agreement. My recommendation to you is that when you start a new group or a team, that you start by saying, how do we want to conduct ourselves? So an example would be, let's agree that one person speaks at a time. Let's agree that we will listen carefully and understand, and if we don't, we'll ask clarifying questions. Let's agree that we'll have a facilitator at every meeting. Those are what I mean by process agreements. If you don't have... Please.
This is Carlton Samuels. Yes. I didn't want you to go from the issue about... participation in meeting without recognizing a couple of things. The nature of knowledge work demands reflection. And this that we are engaging is knowledge work. A teleconference is really a beauty contest. The knowledge work that is required involves you actually showing reflection. That is why we have different tool sets to work with. This is why, for example, I personally prefer writing. That is why we have wikis that are available for you to put your reflection on. And our staff work really very hard to make all of these tools available and telegraph them to us. So I have a difficulty when it is said that we use teleconferences as the main basis to work. Not true. Let me tell you something else about how this works. You see these conferences that they have at the UN and all every place. The real work doesn't happen when they sit in front of the microphone. The real work happens before they get there. That requires people to read a lot of documents, synthesize, think, write it down. That's how it works. The guy who's sitting at the telephone, at the conference, talking, jibber-jabber-jibber-jabber, he's not the one doing the work. Hardly. It's the people behind the mood of the work. And that work happens long before he speaks. That's one thing you need to... That's just the nature of knowledge work.
So may I... Let me interrupt, because I want to tie what you're saying back to the point that I'm making up here. So an example for me, Carlton, of a process agreement that you would make up front in the very first meeting is that we agree that we will be prepared for the meetings when we're together teleconference, which means that we will read the documents, that we'll reflect on them, and we will come prepared being able to talk about those points. That would be a process agreement. Okay, thank you very much. Excellent point. So I think this point is made. We'll move on. So if we have the next slide. Yes.
Soy Fatima.
This is Fatima for the record. I agree with Carlton. I agree with you, Carlton. We need to have read the documents before. We need to have done previous work. But let us not forget that we are having metrics of engagement and participation in working groups and teleconferences in ALAC. So we need to do work before, but we also need to participate in the teleconferences. Otherwise, we, you know, have a reprimand, if you will, from the chair. So if we have to or want to participate, we need to do prior work, and we need to participate in the teleconference, not for the sake of chit-chat or for listening to our own voices, but to share our previous work. Thank you.
Comment, and then I'm going to move on.
Alberto Soto.
This is Alberto Soto. I'd suggest that Ilad should carry on with his presentation without our interrupting him with topics that we need to resolve among ourselves. Thank you.
Thank you. I also feel that the comments that you're making are an attempt to try to implement the ideas. And so I'd like to find a balance between finishing by 11:30 and meeting the, you know, all the doing all the content, while at the same time respecting that your input is very valuable. Matt, do you have a remote participant? Yeah.
Hi, this is Matt Ascioni for the record. We have a comment for a remote participant, Rudy Vanznik. Rudy writes, ALAC is a threefold structure where the consensus reached at the highest level could be in contradiction with what ALSs being all together decide.
Okay, thank you. All right, so now we're going to move on. And this first slide, consensus is built within meetings. Let me define a meeting. A meeting is any time two or more people come together for the specific purpose of creating a result. So if I invite you to dinner and we're going out and just informally chatting about our families, that's not a meeting. But if I've invited you to dinner and the specific purpose I have is that I'd like to talk about something that is the work of our committee, now, in my definition, that's a meeting. The reason for the distinction is that a meeting has very important rules that if you follow them, the meeting tends to go better. And going better means that you get more likely to get to the result. So if you want to build consensus, then understanding how meetings work is going to help you tremendously. All right, we can move on. So, key number two, effective meetings start with an agenda. So, I'm going to say a few things that, you know, I don't want them to appear to be criticisms. I'm giving you some coaching. So, one thing is that if your agenda only has agenda topics, then it's not going to be as powerful as having an agenda topic coupled with a desired outcome. Let me say it in a different way. So let's just visualize for a moment that you're looking at an agenda. And the agenda says, this is the first thing that we're going to talk about. And then it moves on to the second thing, and this is the second thing that we're going to talk about. If I'm a participant, I don't really know what is expected of me or what the finish line or where we're trying to get to with that agenda item. And so my advice to you, this is something that you could take away from today, is that when you build an agenda, that you make sure that all agenda items have desired outcomes. So that's one piece of coaching. And we'll talk more about desired outcomes a little bit more. So then secondly, there's something that makes meetings very effective, and that is to split the roles and to make sure that you have four different distinct roles at a meeting where there's some complexity, meaning it's not a 10-minute informal chat over the phone. It's one of your working groups, or it's a committee meeting, it's one of your ongoing meetings. You want to have four distinct roles. The first role is chair. The chairperson is responsible for the results. So the chairperson's eyes and ears should be on, are we reaching the agenda desired outcomes? That's their job. The second role is facilitator. And a facilitator, their role is to make sure that the meeting is moving along. So a facilitator is the meeting chauffeur. They're the ones who are making sure that the bus continues along the right road. They're also the one that makes sure that everybody is participating. So if you're on the phone, the facilitator can call people by name. They can say, so-and-so, do you have anything that you'd like to contribute? Whereas the chairperson is focusing on, are we getting to the desired outcome? The facilitator is making sure that everybody is participating and that things are moving along. And then there's two more roles that if you have them, great. If you don't, my proposal is that you have them. All meetings should have a timekeeper. There is a piece of research that was done by a group of people that's a professional facilitator group, and they were researching what happens when meetings add a timekeeper. And what they found was that meetings tend to stick to the agenda, that groups respect the time frame more likely. Otherwise, what ends up happening is that if you don't have a timekeeper, it's very easy to get lost into debate and discussion. So a timekeeper is like the group conscience in a way. They're saying, well, we only have 7 more minutes for this agenda item. What are we going to do? They build urgency. And then the last role is the recorder. And the recorder's job is to accurately represent in summary what people are saying. Not word for word. It's not a transcript. It's what's the essence of what the person is saying point by point. So those are four distinct roles. And then the last, in terms of my suggestions to you, and this is probably the one that you would need additional coaching on or training, and that is to link what's called a process tool to the agenda item. So, for example, a group of people come together and they're trying to figure out different ways to solve a problem. And so the very first agenda item is, let's list the possible ways that we could address this. And so the tool, the process tool, is called listing. And there are at least 75 different process tools. And each process tool fits in a category that's called either opening, which is the opening of the discussion, narrowing, which is narrowing the conversation and trying to get to closure, and then the third stage, which is called closing. So there are tools for opening, there's tools for narrowing, and there's tools for closing. Now, I tell you this knowing that it probably will require further study, but it's important to know that you want to use the right tool at the right time. Okay, we can move on. Scaling the mountain of consensus is done by handholds of small agreement built by careful listening and looking for agreement. So you're in a meeting, and the chairperson says, okay, we have 15 different proposals for how we're going to solve this particular problem. I'd like to get to an agreement within the next 30 minutes. Well, how are you going to get there? The first way that you might get there is to make sure that everybody understands the proposals. That's part of, that would be included within listening, making sure that you understand what people are proposing. Another thing that you might do is for people to say, I see that there are several here that all kind of go together. That's called aggregating. So what you're doing in that is you're listening for the proposals and you're making suggestions for moving up the mountain. So you're moving from one handhold to another. So let's move on. And then after this slide again, I'll just open it up and see if there are questions. Members can influence the meeting anytime. Okay, let me ask you a question. How many of you have been in a meeting that you felt wasn't going anywhere? Raise your hand. How many of you have been in a meeting where you felt like it wasn't following the agenda? Yeah. So we all know the seven deadly sins, right, of meetings. And you're sitting there, and how many of you have ever found yourself feeling powerless? Like that you didn't know what to do? So let me make a couple of suggestions. A member can influence the meeting by doing a couple of things. So here's a really simple thing that you can do that will help the meeting tremendously. If you don't know where the meeting is going, ask the question, where are we going? Or you could say, where are we? I'm confused. I'm buried in all this detail. Where are we in this process? So the first thing that you can do as a member is you can draw everybody's attention to the fact that maybe not just you, but others are also feeling confused. A second thing that you can do that will influence the meeting is you can say, what is our desired outcome for this topic? You can remind the group that there is a desired outcome, or if there hasn't been one stated, then you can ask the question, where are we trying to get to? A third that you can use, again, this is influencing from anywhere. The third thing that you can do is you can ask, how will we know that we're finished with this? What will success look like? You know, I found myself in meetings so many times when I know that we're having a discussion, but I'm not sure why we're doing it. And so I'm suggesting to you that you are very, very powerful, and that as a member in a meeting, if you find yourself exiting, if you find yourself leaving the meeting while you're still sitting there, then it's probably because you're feeling disenfranchised or that you're not engaged. And if you're not engaged, a quick way of getting engaged is to ask a question for clarification. Okay? So, at this point, are there any questions for clarification on anything that I've covered in the last three slides? Or if you have a specific example that you'd like to give about how to apply it, this is a good time to do it. So if you just raise your hand so I can see. Yes, please. If you wouldn't mind going to the mic. Thank you.
Soy Wolf, Ludwig.
Regarding recording, because there are deep... I have a question regarding recording, taking minutes of a meeting, because I'm always confronted with different expectations. You were referring to the concept that there should be a summary of what was said, etc., and then it must reflect or mirror the content of the meeting. Mm-hmm. Other people are saying, if I'm confronted afterwards with 3 to 5 pages of meeting minutes, I will never look at them. Therefore, only the outcomes are noted, and what is said is not recorded, not even as a summary, because this is only interesting in a case of conflict afterwards, but normally people won't refer to it. Thanks. It's just a question or
yes,
a consultation.
Yes, it's a really very good question. So there's 3 different ways I'd answer this. First of all, if you have to have a transcript that is a contemporaneous record of the meeting, of course, you'd want to have that. But if I'm a member of a meeting, what's most important to me is a brief summary and any decisions and action items. The only thing that I want to read if I'm a member of a meeting is a quick summary and what are the action items, who's responsible for what, and then any decisions that were taken. So that's my suggestion. Again, if it goes against the rules of your particular meeting, you know, you'll have to either negotiate that or, you know, do something in addition. Okay. Anybody else before we move on? Okay, I'm going to move on then. Thank you. So next slide, please. Okay. So recognizing that some of these concepts, or many of them, are very new to you, I selected what I think are the most important, and one of the most important concepts in consensus building is that consensus always comes from respecting that there are 3 phases. There are 3 phases in consensus building. The first phase is called opening. And in the opening, it's when the discussion starts. It's where people express their opinions. It's the time when people will say, well, this is my point of view about that. Then, in the opening phase, also what's there is a clear understanding of what the desired outcomes are. So in the opening phase, you must state, where are we going? What's our journey's destination? And then there's a narrowing phase. The narrowing phase is taking the ideas, multiple points of view, and beginning to get them from this many to this many. That's called narrowing. And the last is closing the conversation using the decision-making method that is agreed upon. So let me just introduce that concept. Now we'll go one step further. So next slide. So these are tools that facilitators or chair people use to open a conversation. So a tool for opening is called listing. Let's list at least 7 different ways that this particular problem has been a problem for us historically. That's list. Criteria generation is a tool. So criteria generation means this, that the way we're going to come to a decision is by developing objective criteria. And so let's list objective criteria that we're going to use to look at all the possible solutions and then to narrow that down. So what would be an objective criteria? Budget would be an objective criteria. Time would be an objective criteria. That it meets the ICANN values, that would be an objective criteria. You know brainstorming, you've used it. From my point of view, the most important thing about brainstorming is that if you're going to use it, that you remember to not judge, criticize, or evaluate any ideas during the brainstorming stage. That comes later. Proposing, making proposals, and then tentative hypothesis. We saw that in a meeting that I was in where people were saying, somebody said, well, I don't really know whether or not this is true, but I think that, and that's called a tentative hypothesis. Okay, let's move on. So we've talked about opening, and now we're going to... Is it just loading, huh? Okay. All right, know how to narrow down choices. So now we're in the narrow phase. Well, there are tools for narrowing. So if I'm a facilitator and I can see that there are highly contentious, strong opinions on different sides, then what I will do is I'll say, why don't we take 10 minutes for people to advocate for their position? So what that does is it legitimizes people being able to express their opinions strongly. That's called advocating. There's a tool that's called nominal group process. If you go on the web and you type in nominal group process, it's an extremely valuable tool when you're trying to narrow down a big list. Let's say that you have 35 different ideas that you're trying to narrow. In nominal group process, what you do is you give everybody, well, what you do is you take 35 and you divide it by 3. So 3 into 35 would be about 12, approximately 12, right? Is that right? Wait a minute. Yes, okay, right. So what you're going to do is you're going to cast 12 votes. You get 12 votes and no more. You're going to cast 12 votes for the things on that list that you think are the most important. That's a way of narrowing down people's preferences and getting an idea about where the consensus might be moving. And then the last one is called a T account, which is take a piece of paper. On one side you have plus, on the other side you have minus. On one side you have pros, the other side you have cons. On one side you have risk, the other side you have benefit. So a T account is basically two different variables that you're looking at suggestions or proposals from. Now, again, I'm moving very briskly through a lot of tools. The point is, there are many, many tools for addressing the concerns and the problems you're dealing with. And probably the thing that's holding, one thing that's holding you back is not having a big toolkit. And so you might make as one of your capacity building goals to expand your toolkit as a working group, as a Rollo, as a ALAC. Okay, we can move on. Okay. Yes, please.
Sorry, just one question on the previous slide. What is nominal group processes?
So nominal group process, which also is sometimes called N over 3, is what I was referring to a moment ago. Yes. Great. Okay. So know which decision-making method you're using. So let me state something in a very strong way. From my observations at being at four ICANN meetings, I think that a lot of groups don't know what consensus really means. So consensus is defined by people who are in the business of decision-making, negotiation, in the following way. Consensus is a decision that you can live with and that you're willing to implement. That's what consensus means. Consensus doesn't mean everybody agrees, that everybody thinks it's perfect, that everybody thinks it's wonderful, or that it's the greatest solution in the world, or that it's even the best solution. It's a pragmatic view on decision making. So there are many different ways to make a decision. And so let's move on to the next slide. So here's some ways that people make decisions. Yes, unanimous agreement is a decision-making method. You can hold a group to that standard. You can say, we are going to, because this is such an important issue, and we have to make sure that everybody can buy into this, it's unanimous agreement that we're going to use. That's just one way of making a decision. Another way of making a decision is unanimity minus one or two. So you could say, well, there may be one or two people that we would record as a minority opinion. But we're still going to try and get unanimity. Supermajority thresholds. So if we have 90%, 80%, 70%, 60% as a majority, we'll accept that as a decision. And then there are other ways. But let's go back to the consensus. Let's go to the next slide. No, I'm sorry. Next one, not backwards. Ah, there we go. Thanks. So here's a working definition. So the first point that it makes up there is a consensus is a decision that everyone has been engaged in coming to collaboratively. So that means that you've had a voice. It means that you've had opportunity to give input. It means that you've had a chance to influence the outcome. And the ability to move forward towards consensus has much to do with how skilled the chair, how skilled the facilitator is in making sure that all points of view are represented. Second one is a choice that you can live with. A third is a decision that you're willing to implement. The point I want to make about this, and then I'll take the question. The point I want to make about this is, have you ever been in situations where a decision was made and then 2 weeks later, people go back and they say, well, wait a minute, I'm not so sure that was really a decision. Anybody? Yeah. So if you are the chair or you're facilitating the meeting, you have to call the question. You have to call the question explicitly. Am I understanding that we have a decision? And look, go around the room, go around the phone. Do we have a decision? Or conversely, you can say, this is called negative polling, you can say, right now, is there anybody that has disagreement with this decision? Speak up, or we will have made the decision and it's done. So I'm saying bring it to closure strongly. Yes.
Thank you. Just one question. What you're describing is, or more precisely, the type of problems that ICANN has is the one you describe, but there's also another problem, which is having the capacity to participate doesn't mean that everybody who may feel concerned by the decision has participated indeed, and there may even be cases where people have voluntarily not participated in order to be able afterwards to say, I'm not committed to this consensus. There's no perfect solution to that, but what are your hints or suggestions on how to address that kind of problem?
Well, first of all, let me say that it's a very very thorny or complex problem. But if you look at the best practices from other organizations who have to deal with very similar kinds of issues, one of the things that they do is they send out communications that say, we are having a meeting at this time, and the purpose of that meeting is that we are going to come to an agreement. If you do not attend that meeting and your point of view is not represented, the decision will be made anyway, and it'll be done. That's one thing that I think is very useful. Okay, let's move on then. So, again, going back to the theme that I started with, which is open, narrow, close. So now we're talking about closing. Well, how do you close to get to a decision? I've been in meetings where sometimes the way you get to closure is that you say, look, let's take the next 2 hours and let's start with making proposals. And so if you're the chair or you're the facilitator, then you have to be very rigorous about going through one proposal at a time. So you say, okay, let's close. We're getting into the closing phase, but we're not at a decision yet. Let's hear proposals or suggestions. So one proposal is made, and then you say, okay, let's work on this proposal. And you take that proposal and you go as far as you can with it. Somebody may make a counter proposal. They may say, I like that very much, but I think you've missed this. Let me add that. And so the person who proposes has the opportunity to say, I accept that, and now we can continue to move forward, integrating what had been a part of the counterproposal. So one way of closing is to make proposals. Another is to listen for themes and trends. If you're the chair or you're a member in the meeting, one of the things that you can be listening for is whether or not there has been some agreement amongst people about what they think the right solution is. So sometimes the solution is already agreed upon, but nobody has said, let me see if I understand where we are. It sounds like there's at least six people who have said the same thing in different ways. Here's what I think I'm here's what I think you're saying. So listening for themes and trends, listening for whether or not we're edging towards consensus is a way of building consensus. And then going back to match possible solutions with objective criteria, one way of getting to a decision is to go back and look at the proposals and see whether or not they meet those objective criteria that you developed back in the first phase. So in the first phase, if you said, well, we have a budget of, or we can't add any more people, or it has to meet the goals of our organization, then you can use those objective criteria to go back and look at solutions and see which fit and which don't, or which fit best. And then sometimes the best thing you can do is to say, what can you live with? Not again, it's a matter of what will satisfy the members' need to be able to move forward with a good solution, but not necessarily the absolute best. So let me just see if there are questions or comments before I proceed. So we've gone through opening, narrow, and closing. Please.
Sandra Richter, ALAC for the record. One question. We are a group of people working and do it time constraints and time differences. Not everybody is able to participate in any discussion, telephone conference, meeting, whatever. If I go through these steps and find consensus between the building on between the people online, how can I bring this decision to the other people which were not included in the decision? Thank you.
Let me just clarify. There's two different parts or two different ways I could understand that. One is, how do I include the people who are not participating? And the second is, how do I make sure that they know about the decision? Which of those, or is it both?
More the first one.
Okay. So how many of you are familiar with the term synchronous and asynchronous? How many of you have heard that, synchronous and asynchronous? So in virtual meetings or meetings where you have some face-to-face and then you also have virtual, you have two different ways that you manage time. One is what's called synchronous, meaning we're all in the same place at the same time working on the same problem. That's very rarely the case with ICANN work. More likely, the kind of work that you have is some people who are on the phone together working while you have some members who can't make it. That's called asynchronous. And so what you want to do is you want to structure the participation so that the people who are not present have an opportunity for, like, public comment. You know, so for example, in the opening phase, you could say, well, the group of people who met at, you know, on Saturday came up with these ideas as possible solutions. You have the next 24 hours or 48 hours to add yours to the list. That's a way of making sure that you have the people who are able to attend and the people who are not able to attend both be able to give input. Good. Anyone else before I move on? Okay, let's move on to the next slide then. Okay, so I have a couple of slides about what's the work of the leader. So if you find yourself currently in a role as a leader, or you think that you may be interested in being a leader in the future, these slides pertain to you. So here are some things that leaders do. They encourage effective representation and participation of key stakeholders. So one question that I find myself asking when I'm with a group of people and they represent others is to say, is that your opinion, or are you representing your stakeholders or your constituents? That way you remind people when they're representatives that they are both representing their own point of view, but they also have a duty to make sure they represent others too. Listening carefully and inquiring frequently, helping the group meet its goals via well-constructed agendas and management of the meeting, identifying resource needs. So, for example, you may have a meeting that's coming up and you don't have resident expertise in a particular area, then a leader, their job is to make sure that the group has the right kind of resources intellectually or cognitively for adding to a decision, helping the group with process of joint fact-finding. That means that in between meetings, let's agree that we're going to go out and look for this data. Okay, next slide. So this is probably the most difficult part of leading, and that is being in the position of being the negotiator. So let me recount a little bit of research to you. Have any of you heard of the Harvard Negotiations Project? Anybody aware of the Harvard Negotiations Project? Okay, we have one or two. So probably the most important work that's been done on the process of negotiation was done by the Harvard negotiation team. And the reason why is because it's used now in hundreds and thousands of very difficult meetings where people have very strong differences of opinion. This is their central finding. So I'm going to summarize it for you. The central finding of the Harvard Negotiation Project is this, that any time that you come to two people or two points of view that are arguing with each other, you have an impasse and you'll never get to consensus. You cannot get to consensus when you have two points of view that are at war with each other. So the second point that they found was that what you have to do is to get people to brainstorm, to work together, to try to generate new solutions that would be acceptable to the members of that negotiation or meeting. So, for example, if you're stuck with just two alternatives and you can't get anywhere, then that's the time to say, wait a minute, we're in a battle here between two points of view. Let's stop and let's brainstorm and see if we can come up with at least three or four ways that we could solve this problem. Now you have people, instead of arguing at each other, you have people on the same side of the table looking at a common purpose, trying to generate a solution. Okay, let's move on. So, just in summary, what is consensus? It's bridge building. Because whenever you are in a situation like ICANN, there are three things that are always present. You can be sure that every meeting you go to has three things present. Number one, people really feel that the outcome of that meeting is important. So there's importance. Secondly, that there are strong opinions on many different sides of the spectrum. So there's differences of opinion. And number three, there's strong emotions, and often they're negative. You know, people get angry, they get frustrated, they're upset, they feel disenfranchised. And so the way you get to consensus is by bridge building, is by trying to find where the common vision is. And as I mentioned from the Harvard Negotiations Project, one way of doing that is to be asking frequently, what are some other ways that we could approach this? Second point, bad process leads to no consensus or years of hard work. So a very strong point that I'm making is that if you want to improve your consensus building, learn more about process. You have capacity building sessions. Make that one of your capacity building sessions. Invite people in who are experts on process and facilitation. Ask them to teach you. Third, listen for the trend toward consensus, because in meetings often there is a movement towards consensus that somebody could point to and say, it looks like we have the beginning of an agreement, or I'm hearing a common theme. And then last one, really the way you get to consensus is by being creative, not by being loud. The person who is the most vocal isn't necessarily the person who will build consensus. The person who will build consensus, or the people who will build consensus, are the ones who can keep on finding ways that are not either this or that, but something new. So we are at 11:30. I want to respect your time, and I thank you very much.
Thank you. This is Sergio Salinas Porto, and I'm going to speak in Spanish. Is there any chance we could get this material that you have just presented? Because it would be really good for all of us to have it so that we can further reflect upon it. So I would like to know if this presentation is available and if it is, or if it will have any intellectual property restrictions so that we can duplicate it and share it with other persons. Thank you.
Heidi, just clarification, this will be available to everybody? And how do they access it?
We can send that out. If people just request it to at-large staff, then we can send copies of that.
Because it's my material and I work for ICANN, it's ICANN's, and I think that it there's no restriction. I think we would want people to use it. That's my understanding.
Yeah. Hi, Matt Asciani for the record. I actually put a Dropbox link in the chat in the beginning of this presentation. If you click that link, you'll be able to download the presentation. I'll put it again just for ease of reference.
Any further logistical or?
Yes, here, Ilad.
Yes, please.
Filiz Yilmaz, ICANN staff as well, participation and engagement. Actually, we need to be uploading this on the website. I think that was a glitch there. It should be available for everybody, not only for ALAC, but the entire, people out there in the universe. Thank you.
Good. Thank you.